off his feet. Pain lanced through the Sekhman, burning into his throat, the shock almost stopping his heart. The carbine slipped from his hands, but he didn't register the sound of it clattering on the rocks. Ryan took the blaster and laid it gently to one side. The guard was on his knees, thighs spread, mouth open, as though he were trying to shout a warning. Nothing was further from the truth. The only thing happening in Xavier Hudson's brain was a total preoccupation with a suffocating agony. Bile surged up, gouting between his lips, mixed with bright arterial blood from his ruined lungs. Ryan stood back, watching the man fall slowly forward onto his face, surprised to see him hemorrhaging as a result of the knee to his groin. Ryan stooped down and pressed his index finger to the side of the sentry's throat, feeling for the pulse and finding none.
Have to tell JB about that.
He quietly dragged the corpse out of sight around a corner of the hut. The door to the armory was held secure by a single padlock. Ryan quickly found a rock of suitable size and shape and sprang the lock open. The windows were all shuttered from the outside, so he closed the door behind him and switched on the flickering overhead lights. He breathed in the familiar scent of gun oil and grease. There was a triple row of carbines, all held in place with a long chain running through the trigger guards, locked at either end. Half a dozen assorted scatterguns were bolted into a steel cabinet on the far wall. Ryan was surprised at the low level of security that Zemyanin maintained in his armory. With his Sekhmen clearly outnumbered by 15 or 20 to 1, any rebellion among the slave workers could easily threaten the hut filled with weapons. But he guessed Zemyanin knew what he was doing. From everything that Ryan had seen, the captives were so cowed and exhausted that an uprising wasn't very likely to happen. In a drawer, there was a jumble of handguns, thrown untidily together. On an impulse, he picked out one for Kate, quickly dry-firing it, listening intently to the sound of the action. It was the Charter Arms Undercover model, which held 5 rounds of .38 caliber ammunition. The steel-framed revolver was one of the lightest ever made, weighing in, Ryan recalled, at about 17 ounces. Its small size made it the perfect hideaway gun for the young woman to carry. Shelves on the long wall of the hut held boxes of all sizes of ammo. Ryan took a handful of .38s for the undercover and filled 3 15-round clips with 9mm rounds for his own 6-hour. He also slotted bullets into the half-empty clip of the P226, giving him a total of 60 rounds. It crossed Ryan's mind to use a slab of old and sweating Plasex to blow the whole place apart, but it wouldn't help any in rescuing Dean, except as a diversion. Since his son was already working on his shift in the mines, there wasn't much point in doing anything in the open air. The escape, when it came, would have to be initiated from the shafts and tunnels, rather than outside in the admin complex. Ryan turned the lamps off again, then eased open the door of the armory, squinting into the moonlight to make sure there were no more Sekhmen around. The snow was falling once more, covering the pool of blood and vomit by the entrance. He carefully clicked the padlock shut, smearing a little mud over it to hide the fresh scratches on the brass. As an afterthought, Ryan quickly dragged the dead body from its hiding place and left it on the ground in front of the door, then made his cautious way back to the sleeping hut.
Guessing's not so good as knowing.
He could have filled a book with the sayings of the traitor. There'd been a long, intense discussion among the senior Sekhmen on duty during the night. Should the Major Commissar be awakened? If so, who would do it? If not, who would explain why when the Russian was up and about at dawn? In the end, a majority thought he should be woken up. Then it was down to the drawing of straws to determine the lucky man selected for that honor. The knock on the door of Zemyanin's quarters was hesitant, but it still brought an instant response.
Who is there?
Cliff Roberts, Major Commissar.
What do you require of me?
Dead man at the armory.
It was way below freezing, but Roberts was perspiring, waiting in the corridor. The door opened, and the barrel of the Makarov pistol probed toward his face.
Dead? A Sekhmen?
Hudson, Major Commissar.
How?
We checked him over. No wound. No bullet. Not a knife. Not strangled. I looked at his neck myself.
Zemyanin was out in the passage, standing uncomfortably close.
You did well. The corpse has been stripped?
Sure has. I asked around, and it seems Hudson had a real bad cough. Used to spit red. There was blood by the body, frozen on the ground. You reckon that he might have sort of coughed and choked?
Semyonyan nodded slowly.
It seems a possible conclusion, does it not? No wound?
He spotted the hesitation.
No wound, my man.
Robert swallowed, wondering who'd sucked all the air from the corridor.
I saw his balls look kind of swelled up, Major Commissar. Others said it didn't mean shit.
And what about the armory?
Roberts was now on safer ground.
Still locked. Blasters are still chained. Doesn't look like it was a raid at all, Major Commissar.
But his balls were swollen, were they? Interesting. You've done well, Roberts.
Thank you, Major Commissar.
Still, there was something wrong. Nothing Semyonyan could yet prove, but there was an intruder at work in his domain, burrowing in the thick walls. He could feel it. They worked for another 10-hour shift in the depths of the sulfur mines, cold and wet, trying to save themselves from too much labor. Their plan meant that they'd try to link up with Dean's working party the next evening, which could mean starting on another 12-hour shift immediately afterward. Ryan was worried that his killing of the Sec man might have brought an extra inspection, but there was no sign at all of Grigory Semyonyan, and the day proceeded normally. As they'd filed into the noisome tunnels, they'd passed Dean's shift leaving. Ryan had looked desperately for his son, hoping that he might be able to send him some kind of a sign. But the yellow slimed figures all looked identical. The snow had stopped, and the morning felt appreciably warmer. The river was running in full spate, brown and thick, topped with a tumbling creamy froth. Before they'd even been marched into the shelter of the tunnels, it began to pour with rain.
Shaft 4, level 2, and watch for slips. Couple got buried last night. Two women. So much shit fell on top of them, they'll stay there for years.
The mazy wilderness of the vast mines made it absurdly simple to slip away again. Picking their moment, when one of the Sec men was in another part of their section, they simply walked off from the noise and the lights. Ryan deliberately didn't go too far away. It had reached the point where they'd taken an irrevocable step. If a Sec man caught them now, they couldn't afford to be captured and taken back. Both of them carried their blasters tucked into the front of their belts, ready for action. All they had to do was find somewhere to keep as dry and warm as was humanly possible, and wait. The day drifted by. Ryan tried hard not to keep looking down at his wrist chron, but he still couldn't believe that only 4 or 5 minutes had crawled past since his last glance at the digital dial. Every now and again, one of them would stand and move around, trying to keep the blood circulating and fighting off hypothermia. Ryan managed to sleep for a few snatches, waking finally at the distant sound of whistles and shouts marking the end of the shift.
Not one of my best days.
Want me to warm you some?
He shook his head.
No. Gotta get someplace we can look out for Dean. We need to tag on to the end of his work line, and then spring him.
Never known a man like you, Ryan Cotter. That's the truth.
He smiled and kissed her once on the cheek.
You're something too, Kate.
Less than 400 yards away, on a parallel passage, 3 levels above Ryan and the young woman, 2 electronic red eyes glowed venomously in the darkness. Dean had decided that he'd have to make a break for it. Now that he knew that his father had come for him, it seemed his best plan was to try to sneak away from his work shift and then try and link up with Ryan. He was puzzled that he hadn't seen JB, Doc, Christy, or Mildred, or especially Jack Lauren. But the boy guessed that the others were probably holed up in a base somewhere, possibly close by the gateway. Today they'd been told they were going to be down on level 5, shaft 8, which was one of the deepest working faces in the entire complex. The boy had caught a conversation between a Sec man and one of the senior overseers. For some reason, Semyonyan had personally ordered this particular group to go down into what was widely regarded as one of the most dangerous sections of the mine. Despite his young years, Dean had survived long enough in Deathlands to have an instinctive feel for situations. And he didn't like the feel of this one. On the previous day, Ryan had noticed that a gallery ran high around the top of the vast chamber, just inside the main entrance. Virtually all of the working parties began their day by passing through there. Now he led the young woman toward the vantage point. They doubled on their own tracks, hearing the sound of feet moving toward them, and found a narrow passage where they hid.